Welcome to the Healthy Podcast, where we invite you to invest in your well-being and unlock the secrets of vibrant health, peak performance, and wellness. Join us, Sebastian Mirau and Johannes Kettelhout, co-founders of Australia and New Zealand's leading wellness company, as we dive deep into the science, strategies, and stories that empower you to live your healthiest, happiest life. Whether you are a CEO, high achiever, entrepreneur, elite athlete, health enthusiast, scientist, or self-improvement seeker, together we will explore the cutting edge of biohacking techniques and holistic health practices with world-class experts that optimize your mind, body, and spirit. With each episode, you will walk away with practical and actionable steps to integrate in your daily life. Are you ready? Let's elevate your well-being.
Yeah, the question is like, who even started that? Like, what was the first sort of documentation of the system?
So it goes back to 4th century, 6th century. And actually it started, well, in China. Mm. And the whole reason for it was to find the most auspicious. When you say auspicious, like the good luck. So the most auspicious space to bury the dead. That's what it started off doing.
Amazing.
So actually it was about where you get buried, because that then brings you future prosperity and abundance for your next life. So that's why, I don't know, I remember watching a documentary on an aeroplane, and you know, sometimes you watch the most random things on an aeroplane, and it was about Hong Kong, and I love Hong Kong. And so they have a beautiful burial spot cemetery in the mountains, and it costs hundreds and thousands of dollars to be buried there because, auspiciously, according to the compass, it is the most perfect spot to get buried to make sure that when you come back in life again, that you're going to live in abundance and have the most prosperous, loved, you know, relationship ever. So that's how it started. And you had these feng shui, so it can be called feng shui, however you want to call it. You had these, I think that's part of the problem why people don't even start talking about it, because they don't know how to pronounce it. So the masters of feng shui, it took them 30, 40 years to learn everything. And it was a very secret practice, and they didn't write any of it down. It was all just passed on. And what they did was, the feng shui masters, they used to have apprentices working for them. And they always used to have two. And one of them they told the truth to, and one of them they told less of the truth to. And neither of them knew which one had the correct information and which one didn't. So it's been kept so mystical over the years. And unfortunately, because it was kept such a secret over the years, and that they twisted the truth even from the masters, that this is where the message has been diluted over the years. And that's why it can be very confusing. You know, at one point, I think they found over 400 different schools of feng shui. So, you know, that would be like 400 different languages of...
Holy cow.
Yes, so no wonder it's confusing, because you'll read one book and it'll say, if you sleep in this position, you're going to have nightmares and die. You know, you sleep in this position and you're going to have the best life ever. And it can be really quite confusing, quite scary sometimes. And you think, well, actually, I've bought my home now. I'm not going to sell it. I just want to do some stuff in it that makes us feel better and have a happier life. So... Mm. What then happened was, in the 80s, there was almost this like resurgence of feng shui, and that we started to get this understanding of energy again. And maybe it was the start of, you know, like Rhonda Byrne and The Secret, the manifestation, and all things like that, that sort of started to bubble away again. But it's almost like it's taken until now to regain some of that knowledge back, so that people can start teaching it again and start really getting the message out there. And so when I started learning about it, I think it was very much taught in that classical way of feng shui that was taught hundreds, thousands of years ago. And that's great. And that's very true. But I feel that since that, our homes have changed significantly. And the way we live has changed significantly. So the amount of technology in our homes, the amount of overground technology that's surrounding our home, the geomancy, what's going on underneath our homes, the amount of people in our homes as well, the way that our homes face, all of these things has changed. And I just felt that for me, the message almost needed to be translated a little bit into modern day living. And so that's what I do. I sort of take these ancient practices and I wouldn't say I dilute them. I just like bridge that gap and say, okay, so this is what it said to do hundreds of years ago. And so this is how you make that work in an open plan living area, for example.
Mm. Yeah. And just, well, okay, hold your thought. Something that I want to inject that I found fascinating. I talked recently to quite a famous sort of economist who explained that human behavior can be also modeled in how they change their houses. And, you know, if you spin this further and say, people overall, however they feel, do create reality out of that. That's quite well researched. You can go quite deep and say like, wow, as magical as it is, you can create reality by how you feel. You do it anyway. You can just do it consciously. And so when you look at houses back in the day, there was an entry and then you know, and people probably felt, maybe still from the medieval, I don't know, like you wouldn't go straight away into the living area and into the food, like, you know, in the kitchen and so on. It would be more like you have a path where you walk in and then the you know, then you have your living area, but it's separate from the kitchen, very separate from where you sleep. Whereas nowadays, it's really, as you said, open plan, like you walk in and you straight away, probably in the lounge, it rolls onto your deck and, you know, and the kitchen is part of the lounge anyway and so on. It has changed. And it mimics how people seem to think and feel about their world. They're way more open, which then is also reflected if you look at our social media profiles. They show everything. Like there's not as much privacy anymore, which seems people seem to not need it as much. So the houses are stretched like that. And then spinning that back to the humans that live in that, they would have a particular perception that also then creates a reality that relates to how they feel about their home. Just putting that in because I feel we will get there again a little bit later in our conversation of the content that you show, that I always like to really connect it to like, why does it work and what are the outcomes of it at the end of the day is all manifestation.
Mm. And I think you've made a really good point. Actually, there's quite a few points in there. One of those is how our living environment has changed. And if I look at our home here, an Australian living is very different to homes in the UK because they're a lot newer. You know, there's a bit of a sort of concept of if the house doesn't work, we knock it down and build again. Whereas in England, you just build on. So you end up with these homes with room upon room upon room. Whereas in Australia, it's these very open plan living spaces, which is great. But then you end up with things like bedrooms off the dining space. So we are on one floor. So our bedroom is off our dining space, which is one huge open plan living area. So you've got the kitchen, the dining space, and the lounge. Mm. And then you have a bedroom off that. So you've got the kitchen, which is a fiery place. So not only have you got all of the, you know, the oven, the kettle, the toaster, the bright lights, the fan, you've got everything going on in there. So quite often that is just naturally energetic. And it's a place where people gather. And it tends to be a place where we dump all of our stuff as well. So we come in, put it all on the kitchen surface. You've got the dining table, which is again, quite an effervescent space in the home. And then you've got a bedroom off there and all of a sudden you've got to relax and sleep. Whereas, and you're so close to this very energetic space. Whereas if you go back to a typical sort of feng shui designed home, actually the bedrooms would be furthest from the front door because you want a balance of yin and yang. And yin is the lovely dim energy. That's how I remember it. Yin is dim. So that's the calmer energy. And the yang is this beautiful, effervescent light, what gets you up in the morning, the sunrise. It's all of this lovely energy. So you want this balance in your home between yin and yang. Mm-hmm. Open plan living promotes yang energy. And that's when people struggle to relax. And it's then going to perhaps bring more anxiousness, more arguments, more tension, because you're constantly buzzing. There isn't a space where you can go and chill, because we love putting in bifold doors. We love putting in big windows, and that's great. That's all the energy coming in. But we often don't have these little nooks in our home where we can just snuggle up, dim the lights, and really just relax. And that's where I think the problems arise in the home, in terms of the open plan living space, that we don't have spaces where we can really relax into that yin space at nighttime. And so for me, the result of that is that we feel like we're going a million miles an hour. We don't switch off. The chance of burning out is a lot higher. And so we then have to almost reverse some of these things and put things into the home so that we can then relax. And just going back into your manifestation, what you were saying about the energy, I think this is where like peaks and troughs of manifestation work, because your energy levels, if they're at a 10, you can only sustain that for a certain amount of time. And so I talk a lot about hitting like a sustainable 7, where you can hit that. Sometimes I very much don't wake up a 7 out of 10 at all, but there's things that you can do to reach that 7. And I think in your home, energetically, if you can reach a 7 in general, that's that contentment, it's happiness, it's calm, it's being open, it's being able to love, to be loved, to be kind, to receive acts of kindness as well. And that's that sweet spot of that manifestation energy, in my opinion anyway.
Fascinating. Okay, so basically, just from a common sense side of things, feng shui makes sense. So
when you talk common sense.
Right. Which maybe just comes with, I mean, we're part animal. Animals know, you know, what's safe, what's not safe, what's not, you know, what's not supporting them, what's really supporting them. And I guess we have that, if we allow that, also in us. And I've seen people who are really in tune with that create naturally beautiful spaces. And people who, I guess the busyness has a lot to do with that. Like really not taking the time to really assess the space, say like, well, does this item serve me? Does this setup really flow well? Or do I have to constantly walk around this uncomfortable table to get to the other side when I really should? Is that sort of like part of feng shui as well? Like just using actually common sense and comfort or good flow?
Definitely. And it's, but I do feel with common sense, it's not common sense unless somebody's actually told you. And you sort of put these two things together and you think that you're born with all of this, all of this common sense, but it's stuff that you read, it's stuff that you pick up. So it is common sense. Things like having, let's talk about the dining table, for example. Are your chairs comfortable? And are people going to feel relaxed around the table? Or are they hard metal chairs that you can't relax in, that don't absorb your energy? They don't absorb the energy around the table. And is the dining table completely square or rectangle with really sharp edges and corners compared to a lovely, say, oval wooden table with some beautiful chairs that are soft with cushions and you can sit and relax? And so just comparing those two, if people are feeling relaxed at the dining table, the more relaxing it is going to be sat around the dining table, and the more likely it is that you're going to have better conversation. You're not going to have a stressful dinner, you know, dinner time. And people feel relaxed. Like in a restaurant, if you went to a restaurant, there's metal chairs, you're probably not going to stay that long. Whereas if you've got these beautiful, lovely, you know, velvet chairs that just soak you all up and hold you, you want to stay, you want to relax, and you've got the dim lights and it just makes you feel more relaxed. So really feng shui is just, it's almost like taking an inventory of your home and looking at it with a separate pair of eyes and going, can I relax here in your working area? How is this set up for me to work? Like, what is it? Or do I have to get up every 5 minutes to go to the printer that's over the other side? And, you know, actually my charger doesn't quite fit where I'm working, so I'm leaning over this way to plug things in. Like it's all of that. It's all about the energy in your home, but it's all about how your home makes you feel as well. And what makes me feel relaxed may be very different to what makes you feel relaxed. So it's like matching your personalities. But overall, there are some general rules that you can follow, but your personality has to match your home. And when you go into other people's homes, you think, oh my goodness, I couldn't live here. But some people find calmness in chaos, you know? And I don't find calmness in chaos, but some people do.
Yeah. And I think quite practically, if I think about sort of the homes, we moved house, well, three times over the last sort of like 12 to 18 months because we went overseas and that. Mm-hmm. And each time we moved into a new home, we felt quite fit. So, you know, that there's a lot of their energy around, their artwork around and, you know, and their toys and so on. And it really does happen. It does take a while, but you see like, and you think, oh, this should be this mobile that they like, or this hanging that they made, or this picture they made. And that's then affecting how I feel, but also other people feel. So you go inside and you know, you look at something beautiful or something cute or something that straight away puts me in a very different space to, I guess, I don't know the different art styles, but, you know, let's say quite an aggressive one. Or I sometimes walk into homes and I can see there's a political statement with a picture, with a stomp thing. And that's the energy I have then in me. It's like, yes, there's, let's say, suppression. And I look at this picture and it has a quote that talks about there is suppression. And I often wonder, like, you know, it's, maybe people like that energy because they feel purpose, because they know there's something they have to change in the world. And that's why. But most of the time, I would probably say the way that we soften the house would not be like that.
Yeah. And I think artwork is so subjective, and I'm asked about artwork all the time. Like, is this okay to have in my hallway, or can I have this in my bedroom? And so it is very subjective. However, what I would say is I personally like to use artwork is like visual affirmations around your home. So things that make you happy. Again, hitting that manifestation level of something that invokes a feeling in you. So see it, you know, we have lots of pictures of like the Italian coastline when we walk into our home, because for me, oh my goodness, I'd love to retire on a yacht around Italy. You know, I would love to do that.
That's you. Yeah.
I see them and it makes me happy. And we have pictures of the family around and that makes me happy. And feng shui rules state probably to stay away from abstract artwork because it's a bit wishy-washy. It's not quite, the message isn't quite clear. So it can give a bit of a, like a murky energy around it. You know, you sort of have to sit there and go, what is it? What is it telling me? Whereas you want to use your house and this energy to promote what you want to bring in. So things like if you are wanting an equal partnership or you're wanting to attract a partner into your life, then you would avoid things like photos where there's one of, or pictures where there's one of things like one person, one animal, one tree. You want to bring that community sort of together. But then there are parts of the house where you may want a stronger energy. So for example, in your office, you may want strength and courageousness and, you know, whatever it is. So like a picture of a herd of elephants, I think is perfect for the office because it's strong, they're loyal, they stand up for each other, they're not afraid to show who they are, and they stand the test of time. They, you know, they live many, many years. Whereas something like a flower or even maybe horses, like horses are quite flighty animals. So yes, they're strong, but that energy may be that you're running away from things. And actually we use the energy of moving horses in the house if you want to sell your home. So galloping horses in the hallway facing your entrance door is an energy that you want to leave the home. And so you can use the energy of them that way.
Wow. That's amazing. And I've quite a few questions around quite specifics, but before we go there, just to give people a little bit of an understanding, like I'm sure you've seen great benefits from it, and also the opposite when not considered or just done not properly. Would you mind giving us a couple of examples just like of how this actually looks like in practice in terms of the results for people?
Of course. So I think the thing just to remember is that, you know, the terminology in Feng Shui is awful because it's either good or bad. Like there's nothing in between good or bad. And so when your home can be, we look at money and people. They're the sort of two linchpins in Feng Shui. Is it good or bad for people, or is it good or bad for money? Uh-huh. And the people side of things can be wealth, it can be relationships, it can be your health. And money is also wealth, but it's not that it's hard to earn money, but it may be that as soon as you earn the money, it leaves very, very quickly. So there's always something to pay. So both of these things, you know, they're like our linchpins, really. Now, when we analyze a home, we look at what's happening energetically. It's not done through intuition. It's all number calculations. It's a formula that I follow. So I don't come in with my feathers and smoke and go, oh, no, it's not very good in this corner. I look at when the house was built. I look at where it sits geographically, where it's facing, what's surrounding it. And I have this number calculation. It tells me what's going on. And so therefore, things that can impact whether things are good or bad could be the year the house was built. And it can also be where it sits geographically as well. So just like when we go back to the origins of Feng Shui as to where you're going to be buried for an auspicious life, right, afterlife, the same is with your house. So if your house is built in a specific way, that's going to bring you good luck, or it's going to give you bad luck if these things weren't considered. So it could just be that your house probably wasn't designed according to Feng Shui, which, let's face it, most of our homes aren't. So yeah, it could be that you've been really lucky and that your house has just so happened to be in a great position, or it may be that, unfortunately, it wasn't. And what tends to happen in these homes is that about 40% of homes have been built in the correct direction, approximately. 4 out of 10 are good, 6 out of 10, not so good. And then these homes will have a history of tricky things happening in the home. And so if you're going to move into a home, my first question would be, what happened to the previous owners? So were there relationship problems? Did the past, especially like if the past two people got divorced in this home, or there's been illness over, or even both, or their business failed and therefore they couldn't, you know, keep up with the repayments. So for me, it's taking that, it's almost like a medical history when you go to, you know, when you're going to have acupuncture or you go to the doctors, they're like, okay, so what's going on? I'd prefer to know that about a house than, you know, where the kitchen is or where the bathroom is. And so that, yeah, that tends to be, that gives us what's going on. But then it can soak up our energy as well. So your walls can be like sponges. So it may be that your house has been fine and all of a sudden something happens to us and it absorbs some of that energy. The other thing that makes Feng Shui a little bit tricky is that we also look at, so it looks at the energy of the stars, and every year the energy of those stars moves. So every year the energy in the home can change. And so it may be that everything's been fine and then you got to the Feng Shui New Year in February and all of a sudden things have got a bit tricky. So all of these things can determine good or bad Feng Shui. And the thing that is really important though is that it can all be rectified. And so we use the five elements as you do in Chinese medicine to rectify these things that have been going on. So that's like the underbelly of the energy. And then you can look at the almost like the face value things as to what's good and what's bad, whether that's, you know, closing the toilet seat lid. Everyone seems to know that one, you know, keep that bad energy. Don't let the good energy go down the toilet, close the bathroom doors, all of those sorts of things. So I just think there's a lot more to Feng Shui. There's a common sense side. And then it is down to also how your house has been built. Now, the people that come to me who maybe do live in a home that's got tricky energy quite often have relationship problems. And it's when children aren't getting along. And I've had people, once we've remedied the home, say their dad wrote them a letter that they've not spoken to for 3 years. I had a lady who has identical twins who hadn't spoken for the last 2 years, and they just started communicating just that little bit more. I've had people whose just relationships with their partners have just started, they've started to communicate more. They've started to have a sense of humor again. And, you know, even my story of feng shui, how it's changed my life. I feng shui'd my home with no intention of ever being a feng shui consultant. I was a teacher. I'd been made redundant. And I feng shui'd our home with the intention to have a business that I could do all around the world, that I work with beautiful people, that I got to help people, that I could be financially independent. And within a month, I had an email to say, would I like to do the last ever certification course that this lady was doing? And I said, yes. And this is where I am now in Australia as a feng shui consultant. So I think maybe, you know, my own story sort of promotes what can happen.
Yeah. And would you say that there's a difference between what happens to adults and to children, or it's sort of like the same mechanism?
It's very similar, although children tend to react quicker to a change in energy. And I work with a lot of families with neurodivergent children. And because they are so aware of their energies around them, that
Can you explain neurodivergent?
So neurodivergent, so any child with ADHD, autism, ASD, right, like anything like that. So anything where they may struggle with concentration, may struggle to show their emotions. Mm-hmm. The concentration tends to be quite a big thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my clients who have children who suffer, especially with ADHD, see a massive change in the energy in their children. And they just, and animals as well, children and animals are the ones that are the quickest to react to the change of energy. I think that would be the biggest. Yeah, they're quicker to react to a change of energy. Just like with people, children are so quick to decide whether they like somebody or not. They are aware of their energy all around them. They're in the playground to go, well, I don't like Daniel over there because he's not very anything. What have you only spoken to? Well, I don't like him. And, you know, so they're very quick. And I think they're very quick to pick up on the change of energy in the home.
So when we think about a couple that would not get on, is it as simple as saying, well, the couch, well, you know, their seats when they're in the front of the TV? Okay, people might not know what a TV is, but, you know, like watching something, like, you know, whatever, and they're not connected. It's common sense that they won't get on because they're not enough touch points, or if they sleep in separate beds or whatever it might be. Is it as simple as that, or is it a bit more subtle that you would see, but the couple doesn't, or the person that wants to change that?
So again, there's two layers. So there's the layer of, okay, let's have a look at the furniture. Let's have a look at, do you sit next to each other in the living room? How do you live? Like that sort of living area. And also perhaps things like, do you have equal bedside tables? Do you have equal changing areas, equal size wardrobe space, like just really making that equality in the relationship so that everything is equal in their lives in the home. But then what would happen is when I look at what's happening energetically in the home, some homes do have energies that make it a lot trickier in terms of relationships. So like the southwest of the home looks after love and romance, and the way that homes have been designed, maybe that area is missing because of the way it's been designed, or that the energy in that area is just a little bit tricky. And so that's when we have to use the remedies to make it better. So sometimes there is an underlying energy that we don't see. And that's where the real sort of more complex feng shui, where you'd get a consultant to come and analyze your home, they would fix that energy. So it might be like you've moved into a home and you were fine before you moved into the home, and then you moved into the home, and since then there's just been this you know, bickery energy between the two of you. And that's when I think you can tell that it's the home rather than the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And do you understand why a particular position in a house makes a difference? Is it like how we try to move in a space, or what's exactly the reasoning for knowing that?
So what we look at is the Flying Stars school that I practice is called Flying Stars. And this is, even the name of it doesn't make sense, does it? And what it means is that we use numbers and we move these numbers around. I mean, I can show you on here, for example. I don't know if you can see this.
Yes.
So like there. So all those numbers there. And it looks like a big game of Sudoku, basically.
It does. Yes.
And so I look at the year the house was built. I look at the direction it's facing, the direction of the back of the home, and also the year that we're in now. Mm. And it's almost like coding, really. Each of those numbers has 1 to 9. So we're in cycle 9 at the minute. So for the next 20 years, we're in this cycle 9. So that's one of the numbers is 9. One of the numbers is when it was built, and then where it's sitting facing. And then we move those numbers around the home. And some of those numbers from 1 to 9 are good. And some of those numbers from 1 to 9 aren't so good. They've got more of a tricky energy. So if you've got a not so good and a not so, I'm trying not to use the word bad, because then it would just sound just like it's built. No, if you've got two tricky numbers in an area, then energetically that area is going to struggle in terms of health, wealth, or relationships.
Okay, I see. And is that something that is constantly in a particular position of a house, or does that change on an annual basis?
That changes on an annual basis. So that's why it gets really complicated. So actually, just get a feng shui consultant to come and do it for you. But it changes on an annual basis because the energy every year changes. So it's a bit like star signs. You know, when you come into a new star sign, you've got a different energy from the moon. It looks at the energy from the stars.
Yeah.
And according to feng shui, each year has a slightly different energy. And some years are great, some years aren't so great. So the cycle 9 that we're in at the minute, each of the cycles lasts for 20 years. And each of the cycles is represented by an element. And cycle 9 started in February this year. And it's represented by fire. And fire is a beautiful energy. It can be fiery, obviously. It can be quite tricky. But also it burns a lot through negativity.
Mm.
And so what the prediction is for this cycle 9, looking at the fire, is that things are constantly going to be moving. There's going to be a constant energy. So cycle 8, which was previous, the past 20 years, cycle 8 was wood. And so, sorry, it was earth. And so earth was a very, quite stable, quite strong. And now we've moved into fire. There's been that switch of energy. So quite often in 2024, people have thought, it feels like we're traveling at a million miles an hour. It's burning, burning, burning. It's constant. There's no time to stop. But the lovely thing about fire is that fire doesn't burn by itself. It needs all of the other elements to contribute to it. Mm. And so therefore, there's a feeling of community, of networking, of people helping each other, like coming together. And a cycle is also related to people. So the person that's related to cycle 9 is known as like the middle daughter. So somebody from the age of maybe 30 to 50 and female. So they're saying that this cycle, there's going to be a real emergence of women aged 30 to 50, maybe in politics, maybe heading up organizations, because this energy, the fire is pushing these people through and going, this is who I am. This is what I want to do. Any sort of ceiling that's been put on me before, I can sort of smash through that. So actually, even with the politics in America at the minute, whether they will have the first female president, you never know. So this is this energy that is coming through. I don't want to get into politics, but, you know, so this is how astrology has a real, Feng Shui is built upon astrology and geography. So that's why things change every year.
Gotcha. And so while you talk about geography, so there are certain directions that are just better. I studied a little bit, architecture actually, and how to build houses. And, you know, a normal consideration, especially in Europe, is facing the sun, which is in the south and in Europe. And of course, it's the north here in Australia, although Australia not quite as important. From the point of view that, you know, it will be warm no matter what most of the time. Yeah. But, you know, that's beside the point. Like, you know, that's the main reason, like energy saving, all of that. But when it comes to beauty and when it comes to a beautiful home, the same principles seem to apply. So what would you say are the principles when it comes to geography? Is that linked to something that is quite common sense or more rules that over time have just developed?
It's rules over time. I mean, Feng Shui was, you know, as we know, it's thousands of years old. So actually what is historically known as helping a home is having a mountain behind you, because that gives you protection, and then having water in front of you, because the water brings this lovely energy. You know what it's like when you stand at this edge of the ocean and you've got that beautiful energy coming towards you. So you've got the good energy coming from the water, and the protection of the mountain behind you. And that, again, is why Hong Kong is seen as one of the most perfect feng shui cities, because you've got the backdrop of the mountain and you've got the water energy bringing things to you. So essentially, that's what things have been built upon. But in a modern day setting, that would be having protection of your home from trees and from fences, and not being oppressed by your neighbor next door. You know, if your neighbor was 5 stories high house and yours was 1 story, you would feel that energy coming down on you. But also you wouldn't want to be the house that was the 5 story, because then you'd feel quite open to all of the elements around you. So it's based on a lot of historical principles. And I think architecture probably has an underlying form of feng shui with it, because it's about understanding that there needs to be light. You need to let the light in, you know, that's the yang. And then the yin is where, you know, you want to relax. So I think there are a lot of principles. I don't like talking about it a lot because... the only reason why is because I feel that when I was learning about it, I was like, well, I can't do anything about it. If I live next to a busy road, there's nothing I can do. My neighbor's house is 5 stories tall, there's nothing I can do about it. So I think for me, it's about working with what you've got. And if you're happy in your home, if your health, wealth, and relationships are absolutely fine in your home, then you don't need feng shui. You know, feng shui is like, it's acupuncture for the home. It gets rid of the negative energy, releases energy blocks, and lets the good energy flow. And if you wouldn't go and see an acupuncturist if you felt that your body was working in its best way possible. And it's the same with your home. But if you feel that things are a little bit off, then that's when you can start looking into feng shui.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense from that point of view, for sure. Could you talk a little bit about decluttering? It just comes to mind because I think that's something, as you said, some people love to live in the chaos, but overall there must be also a connection between how people's life is working out and sort of the clutter that they have around. Mm.
So decluttering is a really important part of feng shui, and I'm sure people roll their eyes when I say that, because it's not just cleaning and decluttering. But if I explain why, then I think it helps people to do it. Yeah. So there's two things when it comes to clutter. One is the energy that surrounds the stuff that you have in your home. So are you keeping it just because somebody gave it to you? Like, do you actually have any feeling towards it? So my rule is, unless something brings you joy and happiness or practical reasons why you need it, then don't keep it, because anything that makes you feel negative, and that's even pictures of relatives, artwork that somebody's gifted you, you don't like it, but you've put it up because you want to make people feel happy. You know, it's your home. Like, you've paid the most probably out of anything in your life that you're going to pay for. And for some reason, you let somebody else dictate what you have on your wall. Like, put your foot down, only have things that bring you joy and happiness. But the energetic reason around for decluttering is because the energy moves around your home, almost like air moving around your home, air circulating around your home. And the more stuff that's in the way, the harder it is for that energy to move around your home. So the good energy comes in through the front of your home. Mm-hmm. And the front of your home, if you live in a normal house, would probably be your entrance. If you live in an apartment, the front would be where the light shines in. So like your balcony or your windows, for example, looking out. So that's where the good energy comes in. Now, if you're in a house, for example, when you get to your front door, if there's loads of shoes, loads of bags in the way, that good energy is coming through and all of a sudden it's meeting a physical block and it's taking the energy of those shoes and coats all around your home. So I'm not saying get rid of it, but put shoes in a shoebox with a lid on. Like, we have a shoe rack at the front of our house, but I ban people from using it. And they just go in the wardrobe, close the door, that energy is then sealed in there. So that's really the reason for decluttering, is that once that good energy has come into your home, you want it to be able to circulate all the way around the house, and every single barrier that it has, the harder it is for that energy to flow.
Yeah. And I think what's important to me to really distinguish when you say it, something has maybe a not preferable energy or a really good energy, at the end of the day, it's probably what it evokes in a person too, right? Yeah. So if they see dirty shoes, they probably don't feel really uplifted, but they just feel like, oh yeah, dirty shoes, I should clean them, or, you know, why have I not looked after it? Or the thoughts that comes in the person. Mm-hmm. I found that really important myself, because it empowers me that I have actually a choice of how I feel about things, but then also I can do something about the things that don't make me feel ideal.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So when you look at different cultures, would feng shui look slightly different?
A different what, sorry?
Yeah, so are there different elements that, you know, might give us joy and not the other one? I don't, you know, just a random example, the Germans like cars, right? Like, so would it be that a picture of a car, which is sort of like a bit abstract, is really technical, actually does evoke in the right person that really loves cars, still a positive feeling of their home versus a person that is a nature lover and puts elephants there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you've got to resonate with the things in your home. So there's lots of feng shui theories around putting artifacts like a lucky cat, for example, in the southeast area of your home. The southeast looks after your wealth. The lucky cat is meant to bring good fortune into your home. But if you look at a lucky cat and think, doesn't mean anything to me, then there's no point having that lucky cat in your living area, in the southeast area of your home, because you're just going to look at it and think, I don't resonate with it at all. So for me, in the wealth area of my home, I like to have pictures of us traveling as a family, because for me, that's wealth. It's having the time to go away and the money to be able to pay for those trips to go away. So actually, that's what I have in my wealth area. You may want a picture of that car because you want to be able to have one of those cars in your life, and you need to have the money to be able to purchase that. You may, you know, even multi-millionaires, they may own a yacht, but they may then have a private jet magazine on their desk in the office or in the desk at home. You know, you're always wanting to aspire to the next thing, to bring your energy into the next thing. So whatever it is for you that brings you joy and happiness that you want to attract in your life, then it's your home and that's what you want to have. And so that's why artwork is very, very subjective.
Okay, gotcha. Two selfish questions. Where would you put an infrared sauna or a sauna in general, which I guess is a fire element?
It's a fire element, yeah. The place to avoid would be your kitchen, but I'm guessing not many people are going to have one in their kitchen.
Bathroom is more common if you have a small space outside and an awning. It is often the garage, which I don't know what type of energy that has, or the gym.
I think the garage would be an amazing space because the garage isn't classed as your internal energy. I also probably wouldn't have it in your bedroom.
Yeah.
But again, I'm sure people may, you know, may do that. The reason why I'm only going to say this is because it is a fiery element. And so if you've got a fiery relationship, then that may just shift some of that energy. But the bathroom is a great space to have these things because the bathroom in Feng Shui is almost like a waste room. So it you don't really pay it much attention as such. You close the doors to it. So, you know, you keep that energy inside of it. So having an infrared sauna in there would be a perfect space because that energy is created in the infrared sauna, but also it's being lost like down the drains and down that energy that way. So then the energy is not then coming into the house.
Interesting. And then second one would be like an ice bath, an ice plunge. Where would you put that one? Because that might have very different energy.
So I want to just give you a bit of a backstory as to why I wouldn't place an ice bath outside in the center, in the south of your home. And I'm going to explain why this is.
Okay. So, very cool.
As I explained earlier, so cycle 9 is the cycle that we're in at the minute, and it's this fire energy. And the number 9 lives in the south of your home. And so this is where this lovely fire energy is being generated. This is where it's coming into your home. Any water in the south exterior of your external to your home may extinguish some of that fire energy. And we want to keep that fire energy in our home. So I would say anywhere apart from the south, because we want some of that lovely energy in the house.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Look, I just looked into that, like putting people in different elements as there's a particular personality profiling tool which says you're the wood energy, you're the fire energy, you're the earth, and so on. And it is amazing to understand that these energies really cancel each other out, but I guess also moderate, you know. So I'm a wood energy, a lot of good ideas. I can work really well with the people who say, I know who, which is the fire energy. And then they can then take it to I know when, which is the earth energy. And then there's the metal energy, which is like the how, the very detailed how. But if you put myself with a metal straight away, it nicely cancels me out to really great frustration because I would say we will do that. And someone else says, but how? And I can't answer that. That's someone else to take it on the ride before you actually get to the details. And that's the framework that I'm thinking of when you talk about the waste room, the fire relationship or not, you know, the fire outside and how you distinguish it, because it's like energies can complement each other, I guess, but it's also, it can really cancel each other out. So would you, and my follow-up question then on that would be, if you look at a house and you say like, look, let's talk about relationship, you know, that there's not a lot of flow, there's not a lot of fire. Would you actually look for fire elements, which by the sounds of it could be a picture of something that has that fire element in it, or I don't know, fireplace, a candle, I don't know, to evoke that? Is that how it would work?
Yes. So I don't go on, I do the analysis first to find out the energy, and then I match what the person is saying that's going on, because some people aren't aware that things are happening in their home. And then we use the elements to balance the home energetically, because you're right, if there was lots and lots of fire, so say somebody painted all of their walls red in the home, that would be a lot of energy, a lot of anxiousness, a lot of arguments. So we'd then use a little bit of water, and the water would then put out some of that fire. So you would balance it like that. But the analysis tells us exactly where in the home these all need to be in order to balance that energy in the home. So you're right, there'll be a little bit of fire. So the house I have in front of me here, it needs a little bit of water in the south, some fire in the southwest. It needs metal in the west. Metal is this lovely grounding. Metal really does absorb negativity, bit of red earth, fire, and metal again. So we just use all of these elements to complement each other. And it's just like people, if you just sporadically said, oh, I'm just going to throw some metal in this area, it may, like you said, when you meet a metal person, it just cancels out. It just cancels all of that energy. We've got to be able to balance these energies in the home to get the most out of it.
Wow. Okay. So once you've set this up and then the year changes, would you move just the elements rather than the people and the bedrooms and so on around? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the elements just change ever so slightly. So in February, February is like Feng Shui New Year. If you work with me, for example, so say you had an analysis now, you get analysis for now. And then in January, I send you out an updated remedy list for February, and you'd put everything outside on the night before Feng Shui New Year. So you put all your metal outside, let it ground, let it take in all the energy. And then the next day you just put it into its new place and let it settle again. And you literally just leave it the whole year.
Ah, that makes sense. Because so for example, my wife looked a little bit through your work, which is actually how I found you. And and so our twins, they are in our relationship area, which is our relationship area at the moment. And so they have a lot of pictures of themselves being two. Because the number two is a thing, but also like, you know, of the parents of us, because it's our relationship. So I guess in a sense, when the new year comes and it moves, it might be someone else's bedroom, huh?
You're quite right. And it's funny when you actually work out where these areas are in your home, you think, oh no, my Southwest, my love and romance is in my teenage, you know, son or daughter's room. We're doomed forever. So the compass directions all stay the same. So like the north looks after your career and business, southwest romance, southeast is your wealth. That always stays, but the energy in those rooms change. So the remedies that I would give may change slightly, but those, like the center of your home, always looks after your physical health, mental health, self-acceptance. That will never change, but it's the energy that comes from the stars, from that and your number, that's what changes ever so slightly. But just going back to your southwest, so the good thing about love and romance is almost you get two shots at it. So if your southwest is like your child's bedroom, you can also use your bedroom as a way of using that area for love and romance as well. So you can sort of remedy the fact that your children may be causing havoc in your relationship.
And then maybe this is a myth buster. I remember watching a documentary a long time ago where people were saying Feng Shui is crazy, especially in Asia, probably, especially when you have a business, like accounting team moves all the way down the hall and, you know, and Bob from customer care goes over there because like things change around. Is that so what you just said sounds hopeful that this doesn't have to happen, or is that really what should happen ideally?
So what happens is that each year these energies change. So like I said, those numbers, the good, the auspicious numbers, so the good numbers and the bad numbers, they move around. So what is a good area this year, next year may not be so great. Mm-hmm. So that's why some people may say, okay, well, we're going to move the finance team from this area to that area. That's not how I practice. Decide to tackle the energies with the remedies rather than getting whole departments to move. Because I mean, I think it was it HSBC that started building in Hong Kong and they demolished and started again because it was in ever so slightly the wrong compass direction. Wow. And that's how seriously they take it. So they do take it. And I think the thing to remember is that most hotels, shopping centers, and airports around the world are feng shuied. Most super successful celebrities and business people believe in feng shui, from Oprah Winfrey to the Beckhams to Microsoft. They all have their offices and their homes feng shuied. And when I heard about feng shui, I was like, well, if they're doing it, why don't I know about it? Why is it this big secret? So perhaps it's a bit of a faff. Maybe it sounds crazy, but you know what? If it's working for them, then I'm willing to give it a go. And that's how I felt.
Yeah, I relate to that. I recently heard that, you know, like, so in my industry, oxygen chambers are a thing, like, especially if they increase sort of the atmosphere's pressure and so on, that this hyperbaric chambers is a thing. And, but I remember growing up thinking, Michael Jackson is crazy that he even sleeps in something. Like, I didn't make the connection until very recently, until like, wow, sometimes, you know, you can actually say some people are exposed to thinking and more progressive ideas than, I guess, the mainstream. And to your point, it's like, maybe it's worth looking into it if these people do it and they have a really abundant, happy, you know, successful lives, then there might be something to it. Oh, very good. Well, this has been extremely interesting. And I think I could come up with so many different scenarios, but overall, I think the theme that I see really emerging is like there's an overall get it right once, get the layout right and so on. And you can do that no matter how your house, your apartment is really situated. And then there's a more fine tuning, which seems to be like the two main things to time of the year, so that changes once a year, but then also maybe what's happening in people's lives that you want to. I think the acupuncture idea is, analogy is fantastic, because I understand that well. So if something in your body is not quite right, someone can unblock it. Amazing if you can do that in your life just the same. That's great.
And I think that's my message really, is that if it's not broken, then it doesn't need fixing. But I also think, unfortunately, Feng Shui has been missed off, like, the wellness checklist. You know, we all know things that keep us happy and well. Like, we're coming into the infrared saunas, the ice baths, the cold plungers, the meditating, going for a walk, exercising, nutrition. All of these things we know are good for us. And I was doing some research the other day for a podcast, and it was literally just called What Makes You Happy. And I thought, I'll do some research. And not one of them spoke about your environment. It was all external things, from nutrition, who you surround yourself with, your work, exercise. Not one of them spoke about your environment. And that's where you spend the majority of your time. So I think what I want to do is just get the message out there that your home has a huge impact on how you feel. And if your home, if you feel fine, then don't worry about it. But if you don't feel fine, then there's something that you can do about it.
Yeah, great. That sort of aligns with something that I really believe, which is, if you want to change a habit fast, change your environment. And that doesn't mean you have to leave your house. It also just means change your house so that the environment is more supportive of it. I could just imagine something that I found really, really challenging to walk past is chocolate, especially a good one, raw chocolate. So if I want to change that habit, change the environment, which means like chocolate lives in that cupboard that is closed, it means I don't see it constantly. Yeah. It's simple as that sometimes, really. I'm sure some more complex as well.
Yeah.
Well, Kimberly, it was so nice to talk to you. I need to figure, you need to tell us how we best connect with you. I know you have a really beautiful Instagram, you have a podcast as well, but if you can let us know the best way is to find out more and also how to contact you and what you offer as well.
Of course. So honestly, thank you so much for having me on. I could talk about Feng Shui for hours and debate it and laugh about it and say that it's honestly, it's been so lovely to have a really open conversation with you. So thank you. So my business is The Feng Shui Flow, and I'm The Feng Shui Flow on Instagram, thefengshuiflow.com, and The Feng Shui Flow podcast as well. And I offer a lot of tips and tricks on my Instagram. I offer home analyses on my website, and I also offer a practitioner course as well. So if you're interested in learning how to do this for yourself or your friends, or even to do it as a job, if you're crazy like me and you want to just do something completely different, then I can teach you how to do it.
Crazy like the Beckhams, and they got somewhere.
There we go.
So that's amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kimberly.
Thank you.
We hope you got a lot out of today's inspiring conversation. please share this episode with someone you know needs to hear it. Whether they are a seasoned health expert or just beginning their wellness journey, these stories of remarkable transformation, success, and valuable insights will certainly help empower more people. Until next time, have the best life ever.